Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's Monthly Leadership Forum. Today we are excited to have Stacy Hanke. Stacy is the founder and CEO of Stacy Hanke Inc., a consultancy that equips leaders within organizations to communicate with confidence, presence, and authenticity. She's the author of two books, Yes, You Can, Everything You Need from A to Z to Influence Others to Take Action, and her latest book, Influence Redefined, Be the Leader You Were Meant to Be, Monday to Monday. Her books provide practical and immediate skills and techniques that have given thousands the ability to enhance their influencing power. Stacy helps individuals eliminate the static that plagues communicative delivery to persuade, sell, influence, and communicate face-to-face with a clear message. She has trained over 15,000 people to rid themselves of bad body language habits and choose words wisely. She has delivered over 500 presentations for business leaders from the financial industry to the healthcare industry to government and everywhere in between. Her client list is vast, from Coca-Cola, Kohl's, the United States Army, Navy, and Air Force, Leo Burnett, AT&T, and the FDA. She has inspired thousands of featured guests on media outlets, including Smart Money Magazine, Business Week, and Lifetime Network. I want to welcome you, Stacy. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. I always love these opportunities, so thanks to you and your listeners.
Yeah. We have been doing this now, I think, for 15 years.
Every month,
and we're being consistent. And this month, this year, we're working on the theme of influence. So we thought you were a perfect person to have with us. Tell me where you're calling from today.
Chicago.
Okay, a couple hours ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
It will come through. Yes, it will definitely come through.
Got it. Awesome. So we've got different types of people on the call. We have some consultants. We have some managers. So most of the people here are in Silicon Valley, but actually sometimes we have people from all over. So that's what we have today. The first question I always ask people is, what has your journey been like? I know we heard your bio, but I think I'd like to hear from you what your journey has been in terms of why you decided to write this particular book, Influence Redefined.
Stacy Hanke Inc. is 16 years this year. Now that's important to know because that book is really a footmark on our research, our interviews, the many clients that we've been blessed to be able to work with. And I keep saying we because there's a whole team behind me that also supports the material and is out there training executives. Over the years, I consistently working with leaders, and I'm talking directors all the way to the C-suite, how unaware they are of how they really come across. And the book really lays out why that's happening and what they need to do to take the next steps. And a lot of it is, I always tell leaders, it does get lonely as you climb to the top. And many times leaders would share with me how the feedback that they receive throughout their career is flawed. Well, now you can imagine if every time you're told after some type of interaction that you deliver, you know, high-stakes board meeting or a presentation, whatever it may be, if you're constantly said, good, nice job, and you've never had the opportunity, the real opportunity to experience yourself through the eyes and ears of your listeners, you're going off of false feedback, and you're going off of how you feel, the level of influence that you have, rather than what's true. And through many times, I mean, I'm so intrigued with body language because you're doing it, right? It's your body language. Yet how many individuals, and especially leaders, who don't realize how they really come across? And that's when I decided to really start Influence Redefined as book number two. I really started to do the research because I wanted to figure out, what is it? Why do some people have influence and others don't? And there's an entire influence model. That's really what the book is built off of. I also believe that influence is so practical to be practicing every day because you're communicating every day. Even if you're silent and you're listening, that's still nonverbal behavior. It's still communication. And really giving individuals the opportunity to consciously think through, how are you coming across? How are people perceiving you from the time you enter the room or the time you enter the call and the time that you leave? I think the biggest disconnect, a misunderstanding of what influence is, a lot of people will turn this on when they need it the most. You know, for example, maybe there's one of our listeners on the call today that's thinking about a presentation that's coming up or a high sales pitch that's coming up, whatever it might be. why is it we put so much effort and focus in prepping and practicing, yet every conversation we have has our name attached to it? We don't practice that. We just practice for the high stakes. And you talked about how these calls have been consistent for you every month. One of the elements to influence is consistency. That if you true influence, if you're really going to have true influence, you have to have it Monday to Monday. That's where the other side of the book title comes through.
How did you get into this originally? Like, did something we didn't talk a little bit about, like, schooling or, like, did something happen to you when you were a kid?
Right. It just hit you in the face, right?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to start out in radio. I wanted to be in TV. I wanted to be the next Katie Couric, but that did not work out.
Yeah, you can tell by your voice. Yeah.
That didn't work out. But I landed a job at a very large retail company, and I had an amazing boss. And he was mentoring me and coaching me. He started to allow me to do a lot of training, and that's when I really dabbled into just human behavior. The big step was when I was brought in by an association where I would hire speakers. I was the MC at our big conferences. I would hang onto their shirt tails, and I'd have them coach me. So there was always this desire of I wanted to be able to help people. I mean, I know it's not like brain surgery or anything like that, but I knew that if I could just find a topic that people could actually apply, that's not just this big motivational rah-rah, but they can actually apply it. And from there, there's always been, and I don't know where I get it from, there's just been this intrigue. I'm so intrigued with body language. I think I'm so amazed at how there's such a big disconnect of how we feel when we come across rather than how other people experience us. And to be able to bring that to people's awareness, which then usually is the answer to why people aren't following you, why are people not paying attention to you during meetings, why are people always on their technical gadgets when you're trying to talk to them? There's so many reasons why people behave the way they behave to you, and it really starts with the experience they have with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's just first just get to the basics of, like, how you define influence. Like, what's your definition of it?
Yes. It's two. I think it's twofold. The first, the really important piece is knowing that the body language and messaging, they need to be consistent Monday to Monday. I'll give you an example of this on this call. If you would have started off and you introduced me and you said hello and I would answer this way, thank you, I'm really excited to be here. I can barely stand it. There's no consistency behind my tone and my words, and we see it. We see it all the time. Women, men, all generations. So that to me is, you can tell I'm passionate about that. And people don't get that. Like, they don't realize how you walk into a room and how people experience you when they interact with you, that's really going to determine the length of trust you have with them and whether or not they're going to act on your recommendation. That's definition number one. The second part of that is having this ability to influence someone long after the interaction has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
For you and all the callers that we have on this call today, I want to be able to influence them, not during this time with them, but that something comes up in their life and they remember these points 3 weeks from now, 3 years from now. That, to me, is true influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the sort of the cornerstones, if you will, of this. You talk about how 95% of leaders don't realize how influential they are. They think they're more influential than they actually are.
Yes.
Yeah, so what would make them be more influential? What would be a way for them to be more, first of all, more self-aware? Obviously, say a little bit more about that.
The self-awareness to me is huge. The only way I know how to do it with myself, my clients, my team, is you've got to be video recording yourself. You need to be audio recording yourself, so that you can experience yourself through the eyes and ears of your listeners. That, to me, is always the biggest buy-in. If I was just to coach an executive and say to them, it takes you a long time to get to the point, or your message is all over the place, they're never going to believe me. Until they hear it for themselves, that's where they realize, whoa, I felt like I was concise and I had brevity. That's not the truth, though. If there is just one piece of advice your followers take from this call today, is video record yourself, audio record yourself, they will completely start enhancing how they come across, I promise. Because once you hear it, you'll pick up, you'll pick up what works for your style, what doesn't work for your style. The good news is we live in an age where we've got technical gadgets where we can be recording ourselves constantly.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost overwhelming.
So no excuse. Exactly. Yeah. I always think of my I always think of my little nieces. My youngest niece is 5, and Sienna is her name. Sienna loves being recorded. All she wants to do is just record me, record me, record me, record me. And I look at that generation, I'm thinking, I wonder if they'll have a different perspective and willingness around it. Because now, even millennials that I coach, they don't want to be in front of cameras, they don't want to see themselves. And I'm thinking, but everyone else sees you. So would you rather walk around life, everyone creating a perception about you that's maybe not true, or you building a reputation that you're not proud of Monday to Monday, or just watch yourself and observe through the experiences that those around you experience you?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious this younger generation are much more facile with this medium. I mean, like, my kid is on YouTube. Like, he's 12. He's on YouTube all the time. They're recording themselves all the time. I mean, people record them. I just went to a conference, and all the millennials recording themselves, you know, like, this guy was riding a bike, recording himself, like, what his thoughts were about the conference, and, you know, it was like the wind was blowing, and, you know, who gives a shit? Like, he just, like, threw it out there and threw it on LinkedIn. Like, here I am. And it was awesome. It was great. And and it was like, you know, it wasn't polished. It was just him. It was like totally authentic. And it was a great example of how he lives his life. And it was great. So I think that people, we sort of have to get over the perfectionistic, viewpoint of that. But I noticed in your book here, just to jump in here, sort of there's different sections in your book. And aspects, and I want to go into the. I guess you have 5 different aspects of influence here. If you wouldn't mind going over those, that'd be awesome.
Oh, the actual 5 elements within the model.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the first one, as you've led me that way, is the self-awareness. First, just being aware. The second ties to the definition of influence. That's being consistent, making sure that no one ever has to guess who's showing up.
Yeah.
The same person always shows up. Reputation. I think everything in the book and what I teach is all about reputation management. That the good news is you have the choice of the reputation you have people have of you. Adaptability. This one is pretty tough, and I realize a lot of people don't do it. Adaptability is that you are so in tune, you're so focused to what's happening in front of you, meaning who you're trying to influence, that you're able to constantly be adapting your words, your style, your message, so that it resonates with who you're trying to influence. And the book gives some practical how-tos to practice that.
Awesome.
Then you jump right up to impact. And impact sits right below influence, because impact is where memorability comes into play. And we live in this world of a lot of noise, which makes it even more difficult to have influence Monday to Monday. What are you going to do in your delivery? What are you going to say in your messaging so that you make sure you stand out from all the noise? When you can have impact on people and they remember you, they remember your message, then right there on top of that triangle in the book ties right to that influence.
Right, right. Okay. So these are great, and I definitely want to go over them. So I think that people would really appreciate that. So if we could start with maybe examples in each of them. So on self-awareness, you talk about how you unknowingly sabotage your influence. So let's talk a little bit about that and some examples. Yeah, and then we'll go through all 5 of these, and then we'll have a chance for people to ask questions after that.
Perfect. So the unknowingly, sabotaging your influence, it goes back to my earlier comment. If you're not getting correct feedback, if you're not consciously practicing how you communicate both verbally and nonverbally, there's this good chance that you're basing how you come across off of how you feel rather than fact. And as a result, usually the feeling is wrong. So when I'm going to compare it to, I use a lot of sports analogies in the book because I think it just resonates with people. Or if you played a musical instrument, anything that takes muscle memory. If you've been playing golf for 20 plus years and no one's ever given you feedback and you just think, I'm good. I get pretty decent scores. I'm good with it. And I get a lot of clients saying to me that those that are pushing back saying, well, my sales goals, I meet them every year. I'm good. So suddenly you believe, well, now you're good. You have no more room to go. Well, the golf coach suddenly starts coaching you and starts pulling apart the way you've been swinging that club for 20-plus years. You're going to go into a whole level of awareness of what's true versus what is fake.
Yeah, after you get over the initial
shock.
Oh, my God. I've got to change my style there.
Right.
I'm glad you bring up the sports. I mean, I big sports person, was a
okay.
player for 10 years, and actually a volleyball coach for 10 years. And
nice.
Yeah, and so I use, with people have been in sports, I definitely use it a lot, because I think that you have no qualms at all with getting feedback from a coach, like none. And even to the point where people will scream at somebody, which I don't think is a good idea, but still, they'll still take it as like, okay, well, it's a coach, so it's fine. And
things right.
like you're getting pushed by a weight trainer, or if you're getting pushed by a golf coach, or a tennis, in my case, tennis coach, or a ski coach, you know, they're picking apart your way of practicing, and no one thinks anything about that, that you're paying someone to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to use that same analogy for inside organizations, because our manager, you know, again, has the jurisdiction to give us feedback, but it's hard sometimes for people to take it, and so therefore they either, you know, don't listen to it or they deny it. And, you know, we don't, and then people are afraid to give it. There's lots of things that happen in the course of an organization where people aren't necessarily willing to risk giving feedback. So why do you think that is? Like, why didn't we transfer being on those teams to organizations? Because I think that would make a huge difference in terms of our ability to influence, our ability to communicate, you know, ability to walk through anything in our performance, frankly.
Two things are happening. A, we're not even aware to do that. We don't even think in those terms. I wonder if it's because we are in whatever jobs we have, we communicate every day. And if we're not getting the feedback, we're not watching ourselves on video playbacks, suddenly it's this concept of, well, I eat lunch every day. Why would I get coached on how to eat lunch? Now, that's very, you know, that's quite the extreme of comparison. But I don't think we can realize how critical our communication comes across.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that feedback a lot from the people that we work with, our clients. Once they start to see themselves on the playbacks, they always will make comments of, I didn't realize how hard it was. I had no idea that's how I came across. I didn't realize that much effort needs to go into my level of influence. So it's that's why that self-awareness is the very first element in the model.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then how, let's get into consistency, because I'm curious about how you delineate between consistency and reputation. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, so once you are self-aware, now you can start working on your skills, your techniques, and what works for your style. That has to be consistent, though. How you experience me right now over the phone is how you would experience me if we were sitting right next to each other, if we were having lunch. I'm going to give you an example. I think I used this example in the book where I was getting ready to speak at a conference, and I'm sitting at the front table, a huge conference center, and I was sitting with the CEO on my left and the CFO. She was on my right. Well, the CEO goes to the stage, and he talks to the whole sales force, talks about how this week-long training, how critical it is. He's going on and on, right, trying to pump them up. And the CFO next to me is on her phone the entire time. I'm thinking, everyone sees us. You're a leader, and everyone knows right now you're on the phone. Well, CEO comes off the phone, or off the stage.
Yeah,
the CFO, who was just on her phone, she goes up on the stage, and she's talking about how critical it is this week that they've got this conference. It's so critical. We want you to stay off your phones. And that's what I mean by inconsistency. When you start getting people to guess who's going to show up on a Monday, who's going to show up for a meeting on a good day, a bad day, that's where I think a lot of people jeopardize their influence, because trust will start to get disrupted.
This goes to credibility, for sure.
Yes.
And
yeah, it ties to that.
Yeah, and how does it differentiate between, because I think they're both important, consistency and reputation, because I think that to have a reputation that you want, you have to be consistent. So is reputation
That's exactly
your model,
right.
is reputation your model like just a bigger version of this? Can you
yes.
tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah. You bet, because now that you're consistent, now you're creating that reputation of, this is, she always comes in confident. I can trust him. He always tells me the truth. I know what to expect from him. Because once I think you start jeopardizing your reputation, which is usually what people are saying behind your back, and you have no idea if the self-awareness isn't there. So I'm just kind of giving our listeners a feeling for how this model flows. And the reputation really is, you know, how do people perceive you? Do they perceive you as credible, confident, trustworthy? And when all of those are in line, that's another piece where you start to get the trust. And to me, all those adjectives, whatever it is, credibility, confident, knowledgeable, trustworthy,
right,
they have to be there in order for influence to occur, because that's how people are going to follow you.
So one of the ways we as coaches would help people do this would be to match their, essentially, their cognitive abilities with their practice. In other words, they really have to be observing themselves so that they know that they're being consistent. Do you have any ideas around that? Like, I mean, that sounds really simple to do, but it's actually not that simple, because it means you have to be, like, constantly and diligently, like, looking at yourself from the side, essentially observing yourself, that you're being consistent. So do you have any tricks or ideas around how to do that? I mean, I have my ideas how to do that, but I'd love to hear yours about how you help people do that.
Find people you trust in your personal life and your professional life that are going to give you the honest feedback of how consistent you are. I always start my personal life. I have sisters that are part of the company, and that's a blessing in disguise some days. But they are always there to tell me what I'm doing right, what I'm not doing right when it comes to this idea of influence. Because that way you get that self-check-in. Of course, the video, the audio playbacks are also key. But I call them accountability partners. Find those individuals in your life that are going to tell you the truth. It's like the personal trainer that says to you, you know what? You gotta stay longer on that bike if you're going to really lose some calories. I mean, it's someone that's really going to be upfront. And sometimes those people are hard to find in the professional arena. They're really easy to find. Just look at your friends and family.
Right. So that totally speaks to what you're saying, and I'm totally with you on that. We speak a lot about peer accountability and having peer coaches. So that speaks to having an outside source to help you in terms of your consistency. But I'm talking about the internal, like your internal self, in terms of having your own accountability. And how, in terms of the actual process by which people remember and have the discipline to see themselves practicing, making sure that when they're ready to practice, ready to go on stage, for example, and that's the obvious one, you know, what do they need to be practicing? But I'm talking more really in the day-to-day, you know, what triggers them, being aware of what triggers them, what makes them upset. Do you have any ideas around how to get people to remember?
Yeah, I think it's still the accountability partner, because you cannot do this yourself. It's still audio and video recording. I keep going back to those. And then I'll just use my own as well. I'm constantly, if you saw my computer screen, it has post-it notes hanging on it right now. And it's feedback that I've gotten from my accountability partner so that it's constantly in my face. Oh, when I have a sales pitch, or maybe it's a presentation in my world, I'll write notes on my notes telling me to take your time, use brevity, whatever it might be that I'm working on.
Sure.
Now, if you do that long enough, to the point now where I'm so conscious of it, again, it's that muscle memory. It's like we're taking our listeners to the gym for the first time. They haven't been working their biceps in a while. After we work their bicep for just a couple of reps, they're going to feel it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we've got to just make sure we stick with it for at least a month, and then it starts to become just this consciousness that when you're in a meeting, you're thinking about your brevity. You're thinking about, are you looking people dead in the eye to make sure that connection is there? But until then, it might be a matter of just the note-taking to give you reminders. It might be put it in your calendar. Every morning, have a message that appears in Outlook or whatever system you use that gives you the reminder of what you're going to focus on for the day or for the morning. And then at noon, another reminder comes up. Now, use the calendars option a lot, because I think about if your children – if anyone's got children on the call, if your children had a concert tonight, you'd be there. You'd put it in your calendar and you'd be there. If you had a meeting tomorrow with a best friend, It would be in your calendar, you would be there. What gets put in our calendars gets done. Why we don't put our own development in our calendar, I'll never know why.
So you're suggesting that to do that as reminders.
Yes.
Which I totally agree with too. And I'm posing this idea that in the moment, so I'm thinking more like reflexivity. Like in the moment, people have to remember to, oh yeah, I got to remember to do this right now. So it's actually, you know, within seconds of something happening. It especially happens like when somebody gets triggered on something that they usually get pissed off about. Like this morning when the, for example, when the, you know, cleaners were trying to clean the street and I was in their way. That was not my finest moment. But
But I think that's where it's the repetition, and it's the you need these reminders initially, and after a while, your mind will just automatically trigger it.
Right. Because
you know, go ahead.
No, it's okay, because you're constantly practicing it.
That's it. It's like the athlete. They just it takes a couple of weeks to get there, and that's why use the reminders initially. You might still need to use the reminders, but you're more conscious of it because now you're focusing on it. It's similar to, I'll give another analogy. You're looking for a brand new car and you want it to be a black Lexus. Well, suddenly you see black Lexuses everywhere, right? Suddenly they're all over the place and you never noticed them before. It's because you're looking for it and you've been focusing on it. It's very similar to that concept.
Right. Okay, great. There's a couple more things I want to talk about, especially adaptability, because I think this is probably the key to in terms of people going from good to great, because people can prepare, people can actually be reflexive, but being adapted to what the audience is doing is actually a key here. So I want to talk about that after we let the audience open up for questions here. If you've got any questions or comments about what Stacey has brought up so far, either speaking up, which we prefer, or through email. So who has a question or comment?
Question there.
Question?
Hi. This is Eric.
Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah, just wondering if you had any specific advice for folks who are working on distributed teams and folks who are communicating asynchronously, both over time and distance.
Yeah, great question.
Clarification, are you looking for, is it more of a virtual conversation then, where when you said you're communicating across distance?
Typically, yes.
Okay, so I always use the exact same skill set. So I'm going to totally throw a curveball out there. Oh, a little over a year ago, my company decided, because we're constantly on the phone, we do a lot of virtual conversations ourselves, and we finally decided, let's take this up a notch. Since we cannot fly to every client from coast to coast, let's start inviting everyone via Zoom. And when I start in Zoom, if anyone's not familiar with it, very similar to Skype, when we started asking individuals, hey, we can't come to your office, can we at least see you? Can we just have a conversation as if we are together? And we do that as a team. My team's located in different states. And every month we all get together, we hop on that Zoom call as if we're there. And I'm constantly recommending that to our clients, that you will eliminate all these challenges of, I don't know if they're paying attention. Are they still there? I have no interaction. It also creates a level of commitment and responsibility for everyone's on that call. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is make it interactive and then interact even more. That's with open-ended questions. That's throwing out, perhaps I say, Eric, I know you've had a lot more experience in this category. Share with us what you've learned. When you start pulling people into the conversation, that also helps you monitor the adaptability piece of it. If it's a staff meeting or it's a meeting with the same people that you hold once a month, a couple times a year, whatever it might be, make sure there's always a rotation of the leader. Another way, because that's also encouraging everyone that, hey, you're not just a participant on these calls. You actually have to say something. We want you engaged. We want you to take turns leading the call. Without getting too deep into the weeds with that one, does that give you at least three ideas?
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I want to advocate for Zoom. We've been a real advocate of face-to-face communication in terms of our coaching for 22 years, and I still am. But I have to say that Zoom has changed the way we interact with clients and can use it as a supplement, and also especially with initial meetings and also with our own team, it really has changed the way we do our work. And different from Skype, and I think it's just a better tool. It's just the one tool we finally have adopted. It's just taken us a while to figure out that one tool that works for everybody. So, chime in and definitely advocate for it as well. I really wanted to get into the adaptability because I think this is, as I said, this is where, the good leaders become great leaders because they're really able to, these are the ones who prepare, they're consistent. That sort of, to me, are the basics of influence. But these are the ones who are able to adapt both in their day-to-day and also in, more of a formal presentation in terms of what comes at them. And I'm thinking along the lines as an example of, people asking very pointed questions and not missing a beat, that kind of thing. So could you comment and give us some examples on adaptability?
Mm-hmm. The piece is really paying attention and focusing on what works for your listener. I mean word choice. I'll give you an example. If you're meeting with someone who is very much of a driver, they don't want to socialize at the beginning of the conversation, they want you to get to the point. Well, if you don't adapt your message to that, you can imagine how you're going to drive them crazy. You'll probably experience a lot of interruption. They'll cut you off. They're going to cut the conversation short. It's also when you're in the middle of a conversation, perhaps it's a meeting or a virtual session, that's why the open-ended questions or even that Zoom option is so important virtually, is to be able to just tell, like telling by their body language that, all right, you just went way over their head or you're taking too long to get to the point. A good sign of this is people going into their technical gadgets, mm-hmm. people just looking at you and nodding their head constantly or not moving at all. Side conversations, and usually, I want to go back to the technical gadget piece, usually people will say, well, no, that's part of our culture. I will challenge that to every end because I'm thinking, really? I really believe if people are on their technical gadgets in front of you, that email that they're sending is more important than the conversation that you're having with them. Mm-hmm. And what pulls them away from the technical gadgets is really make the conversation about them. So there's a model that I use. It's not in the book. It's outside of a book in the work that we do, and it's called the Y model. And if you can imagine kind of a rainbow format, if you can imagine that picture, the Y sits on the top, and the next curve is what, then how, and then the very bottom of the base is POV, point of view, your listener's point of view. When you think about the why, what, and how, most of us spend most of our conversation focusing on the what and the how, what I want to cover, what I want you to do. The how is, in the corporate world, it's the graphs, the stats, the research. The why answers the question, why should your listeners care? Why is this conversation happening now? Why are these people in the meeting and not others? Usually what happens is we spend all of our conversation on the what and the how. If we never focus on the why, we never tap into our listeners' point of view. And we all know that tapping into someone's point of view is the trigger for influencing action. Mm-hmm. And when in doubt, ask. Ask those open-ended questions to really figure out what is important to you. What's been your experience with fill in the blank? So a lot of questioning with adaptability, but a lot of thinking through before the conversation and during the conversation what really works for this individual. Here's another example. Somebody can tell, I don't think they got it. Maybe you need to throw in a story. Maybe you need to throw in an analogy because people, they're not quite getting your concept or you're not able to clearly drive home your key points.
Yeah, I was on a call yesterday with a potential, a new client, and I can tell he was really all business, right, at first because he was just like right getting right into it. And so I had to match him with that. I had to get right into it. We got into questions about the topic, and obviously I keep it confidential. But I mean, the point is that matched him there. But then, as we got to know each other and as it became more of an easy conversation, he was able to open up and we talked about other things. But I didn't start with that because that's not where he was. And I think that's
exactly
where he was. And I think it sounds simple. That had to be. I was on Zoom. That is the thing about Zoom, is like you don't get as many visual cues. I mean, it's better than obviously phone, but it's not as good as being in the room.
Exactly.
So I know I asked him a series of questions and sort of get where he was at, and I had to make really quick decisions about how was I going to be with him on this call. How do we teach?
Good example.
Yeah. So it's a real example. It's very recent. And you know, I've done this a long time, so yeah, a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. But how do you teach people to do stuff like that? To when you're working one-on-one with people, to have the ability, you know, to practice the ability to notice where somebody else is at, and then adapt.
Oh boy. That's a whole process. There's some delivery skills. How can I even break this down? There are some delivery skills. The two delivery skills that are tied to adaptability are pausing, saying less with more, letting your listener do most of the talking, and really breaking up your sentences in short bullet point sentences. Because once you are talking constantly, there's no sentences, your listener won't, but that's another piece that will cause them to disengage. Without the pause, you and I both know, as the person that's trying to influence, you cannot be thinking on your feet. So there's no way you'll be able to ever adapt if you're not pausing. That's just hands down. The second skill that's really important, and I refer to it in the book, is eye connection. That's a lot different than eye contact.
Eye connection, you call it?
Eye connection, yes, because eye contact is scanning. That's what we've always learned. You know, look at everyone when we talk. The way I describe eye connection in the book is, you're really looking people dead in the eyes for that sentence or that thought. That's how you're going to be able to read people. Now, if you just pull this apart, think about how many meetings you've been in where the speaker, the facilitator, is talking to the notes, they're talking to their phone, they're talking to the PowerPoint deck. That's not eye connection. Because every time you're talking and not connecting with your listeners, you're missing opportunities to read them. So the delivery skills come into play with that. In the book, from a standpoint of content, I've got a really quick, fast, we'll use it as a model for the sake of terminology here, that I always have people use, whether it's right before a conference call, it's walking to the next boardroom meeting, it's a quick bullet point questions to ask yourself before you have the conversation, and bullet points you should be thinking about during the conversation. And those questions through those bullet points are all going to help you identify, am I saying what this person needs to hear? What they want to hear, and will it trigger them to take the action?
Mm-hmm. The meaning of your communication is the response you get.
That's right. That's right. And again, when in doubt, ask. Ask your listeners. And that's why that interaction is so critical. You know, what are your thoughts around? What's been your experience with? What are you thinking? How does that feel to you? And notice how open those questions are. Mm-hmm. Exactly, because when you start saying, do you have any questions? You've just said to your listener, don't answer, send a quick email, and then come back. We try to keep it as open of a conversation as possible. Think, too, when your listeners can tell you're really adapting your message to them, they're more open because they realize, whoa, you actually care. You actually care what's important to me to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, awesome. So the last element of influence you have in your book here is, again, the book is Influence Redefined, Be the Leader You Were Meant to Be. And the last element here is impact, influence beyond the interaction. So that, I assume, has to do with not just about the interaction, but what the effect that has, you know, 2 weeks later. So talk about
that
a little bit.
That's it. And this is part of that definition of, you know, can you influence someone long after the interaction has occurred? And it's really going to be the full package. It's going to be the full package of your delivery style. Does your delivery style match what they want? For example, you've got a group that is more low energy, more conservative. Well, if you come in all blazing forward, you're going to drive them nuts. It's going to be the message of the adaptability piece. Do they feel like you really care? And I keep bringing that back, and this is where I talk about trust and eye connection. I talk about delivery skills a lot in this chapter of impact, because to me it really comes down to the delivery skills that's going to have the impact. I mean, think about it. Anytime that you're shopping for, well, let's go back to the car example, and you go to two dealerships, Lexus dealerships, I would bet there's a good chance you're going to buy from the one that makes you feel really good.
Yeah.
In the medical field, dentist.
Price is similar, yeah.
Yeah, or you're trying to find a new dentist, a new doctor. You're not going to create a relationship with someone who's cold and you just don't trust. And we're the same way. The people that we interact with, they have to trust you. And that, to me, is becoming a lost art. I think that's even a word we just take for granted. Yet anything that you look at your life that you create a partnership with, it probably is because you trust them and that person makes you feel good. Or that company. You know, it talks a little bit in the book about companies that are successful because they've got consistent branding. I mean, look at Nike. I'm going to just throw a bunch out there, Starbucks, Apple. All of those companies are successful because they have a consistent brand. And you go back to your favorite brands because you always know what you're going to get. Well, a lot of it is just the experience. It's the impact they have on you.
So you had mentioned the idea of you know, building trust and having that, you know, impact and adapting in the moment. And also one of the ways you can do that is to ensure that you understand your audience before you even walk in the door. So tell us a little bit about, take us through what you do and what you want your folks that you work with do before you go give a speech, before you go coach somebody, before you go to a client. You said you jumped on Zoom. What else do you do to make sure you understand that client, that audience before you go and...
Yeah. The conversation is the big one. We get on a call. We call them pre-calls a good 2 months prior to us even going to deliver whatever session we're planning on delivering with them, and it's a series of questions. And usually what happens, even though we've got a series of questions prepared, I maybe ask the first one, which is very open-ended, and then the client does the rest for me. And you just got to find the right question of that's really going to just open up the floodwaters in a good way, that they just tell you everything about them. And people love that. How many times have I had clients say, man, other vendors have not taken the time to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that makes them feel good. There's trust that's starting to be built, that you're creating a relationship before you even have the big time interaction that you sold them on.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, great. Let's do one more opening up of the line in case somebody wants to talk about adaptability. And if they don't want to, it's okay too. I just want to make sure we give them a chance to open it up. So who has a question or comment about adaptability and impact? Anybody?
Hi, this is Laura. I have a quick question about adaptability, especially when it seems like the room is maybe a little adversarial to the idea you're presenting. I'm wondering kind of keeping that confidence and cool in that kind of a situation.
Great question. Thank you.
It's how you really start. I would use, whether it's a story, an analogy, something that these individuals can relate to, because you want them to know that you're still on their side. And where I see it as backfired is when the audience has maybe different opinions of what the presenter is going to talk about, the presenter just comes out so strong on what they believe, and there's a lot of I's in the first 30 seconds of their message. But when you can really turn it around and perhaps, here's an example, open up with a wide open question and get them talking right away. And from there, however they answer you, you really could develop your very first opening to let them know, I hear you, I want to come where you are on this point of view, and here's where I'm coming from. And when you start talking about where you're coming from, especially if your facts, your ideas are different from them, make sure it is just backed up with some really strong research. And you can tell in this situation, not only is your message going to be a big part of the influence, but you better make sure, too, that you've got a lot of confidence, you've got a strong voice, you've got a strong posture that also supports what you believe in.
Nice.
And you could even, if you know you're going to walk into a group that's completely against you, and I've done this a lot, I will reach out to them. I'll reach out to them before the conversation just to get a feel for, you know, hey, I just want to get a feel for where you're coming from. And again, it pulls down this me versus you. It lets them know that I've got different opinions too, but I just want to see where you're coming from. And from there, we can reach some type of understanding. Maybe not an agreement, but at least get to an understanding.
Great question. They follow Laura at all?
Thank you. That's super helpful.
Thank you, Laura.
Good.
All righty. So gosh, let's go back through the five elements, because really important: self-awareness, consistency, reputation, adaptability, my favorite, and impact long after you've had that conversation. So I just want to reiterate the book, Influence Redefined, Be the Leader You Were Meant to Be, Monday to Monday. She also, Susie also has a book called Yes, You Can, Everything You Need from A to Z to Influence Others to Take Action. Also, you can get a hold of Stacey on Twitter. It's at Stacey, is it Hanky or Honky? Hanky?
Hunky.
Hunky, okay.
there you go.
S-T-A-C-E-Y-H-A-N-K-E, Inc., I-N-C. That's, and then her website is the same, StaceyHunkyInc.com. And lots of stuff on the website that is helpful, the blog and such. So I really want to welcome everyone to that and to encourage you to go to that. I really, again, want to thank you for sharing a lot of your insights and real-life stories. I think people always love that. So lots of great examples. You're in the mix. You're in the biz. You're doing it every day, and it's really obvious, and I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thanks to all your callers for hopping on this morning, right, your time?
Yeah. Well, now it's going to be afternoon here in 10 minutes. So,
there you go.
Yeah, I wanted to tell everybody about our next guest. On Wednesday, June 27th at 11 a.m., we're going to have S. Renee Smith. She's the author of Five Steps to Assertiveness, How to Communicate with Confidence and Get What You Want. So, again, following our theme of influence for this year, we want to encourage people to come on, and you will be able to get the there's an iTunes version and also a version on our website tomorrow. You'll be able to get it. So I want to encourage people to send it to their clients and their colleagues. Thanks again, everybody. Have a wonderful Memorial weekend, and we'll see you next and hear you next month. Thanks so much. Bye now.